All right, Jalen Green has been abjectly terrible in three of the four games in this series. That is undeniable. The Rockets are 1-0 when Jalen Green is really good. They are 0-3 when Jalen Green is really, really bad. I'm not saying there's a direct correlation. At least a couple of those losses, maybe all three to a degree, were very winnable games for the Rockets, especially the last one where you had the ball at the end of the game and Alperen Şengün couldn't hit a jump hook from about 12 feet out, and they lose the game 109-106. But Jalen Green is catching it from all directions right now, Seth, and some of that comes with expectations. He had a really good season this year. He was a borderline all-star on a team that was a two-seed, and it looked like he was figuring a lot of things out as the year went on. You pointed this out earlier. Either I can't remember if it was on the air or off the air, but I think it was off the air. You and I were talking about this, and you pointed out like his numbers are largely the same this year as they were last year. But if you watch the Rockets, which I know you know you and I both do, like there was a lot more context to his numbers this year in terms of winning. You know, more
I wasn't
basketball.
Trying to say that he didn't make improvements this year or anything. It's just, but to try to keep everything in context, he did it more consistently. But it's not like he took a giant light years leap ahead.
Yeah. He's more dialed in defensively. That doesn't show up in the box score, so I'll credit him for that. But he's on this team to get buckets for sure. Stephen A. Smith, this was his message to Jalen Green yesterday on First Take.
Well, I'm going to say this. I'm glad you brought up Jalen Green. Yeah, the camera's right there. Do you not recognize that you're an NBA player? Do you not recognize that you're supposed to be the face of the Houston Rockets franchise? 7 points in one game, 9 points in another. I'm looking at him last night, 8 points in this game. The one game where he had 38 points is when Jimmy Butler went down early and got hurt. My God. And this is Jalen Green, athletic, talented, young. We understand that. But I'm talking about a disappearing act. There's an APB in Houston out for this brother right now. I mean, they got everybody looking for him. Where the hell have you been? Fred Van Vliet is a champion, okay? But he's about Molly's height. Where's the help? Where do you go just leave him out there like that? And Şengün, that's why you had to call his number, him or Van Vliet. You're supposed to be relying on Jalen Green. He's going to get himself traded out of Houston.
That may be. He may get himself traded out of Houston.
And this is the biggest thing is that you can't make any excuses for him. Oh, the Warriors are doubling him. Oh, the Warriors are blitzing him. Right. So you either facilitate, but you first and foremost do not turn the ball over every other possession to start the game. This is, if you're going to be that guy, then find a way to produce still. Still find a way to put the put the ball in the hoop to the tune of more than single digits. But B, just don't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
Don't just like a deer in the headlights just fall apart. Yeah, this is what comes with if you're a bona fide, genuinely impressive NBA player, you're going to get doubled. You're going to get blitzed. Deal with it.
That's the most disappointing thing to me about Jalen Green in these playoffs, in this series so far, is that I can deal with him just missing shots. Like I can deal with it if, you know what, he has a game, he goes 4-for-15 and he's 1-of-9 from three, and he's missing open shots, and that's just how it goes. Or he's just missing, not even threes. Like, he's getting good shots. They're just not going in. He's panicky in this series. He's losing his head in this series. When this team, when the tidal wave is starting to go against this team, he's the player that's supposed to calm things down and go get you a basket. And he just dribbles. He just spazzes out and dribbles into traffic and starts spinning around and gets a shot blocked, or he turns the ball over. That's the most disappointing thing to me is he's a young player, but I mean, he's been in the league 4 years. Like, I get it. This is his first postseason, and I understand this team is his kryptonite. He's not played well historically against the Warriors, but there's not playing well, and then there's just doing things that are just like losing your head, like doing things that are stupid. I'm not saying he's a stupid player. I'm saying in this series, there are several times where the Rockets are trying to stem the momentum, trying to pull the momentum back to their side. And Jalen is just wasting possessions by doing silly things like dribbling into traffic, picking up his dribble. Like, and that's the most disappointing part to me. It's a panicky bad box score. It's not just a conventional, oh, he's missing shots and this thing will turn it around. I don't know. I think there's as good a chance that Jalen Green is benched in the second half of this game tonight as there is that he comes out and scores 30 again, you know?
And I guess the biggest, if the Rockets can't pull off a miracle and become a completely different team for the next three games, but where I would have been most wrong in wanting the Warriors and not shying away from it as opposed to the Grizzlies, is that, all right, that Jalen Green's probably hurt his trade value some amount. How much? Yeah. Who knows? Whatever it might be. But it's very much a display of where he is not yet as a young. And he doesn't have the excuse of being young anymore. You know,
no.
Making progress several seasons in in the regular season, but then falling apart in the playoffs like this, people are going to really, really wonder what his complete upside is.
Well, he's not cheap anymore either. He's still got 2 years left on his deal after this at $30 million a year on his contract. And he is a player who, while we're pointing out the flaws in his game here and the series that he's had, he is a player that if he puts together another couple good regular seasons is going to be a guy who's going to be wanting a big contract after this one. So those are other things that whoever trades for him, or things the Rockets, quite frankly, have to think about if they wind up keeping him.
I think classically, though, too, this is a team that's got – they've got younger players like Şengün and Jalen Green, et cetera, but they have the older veterans. But then there's the other dynamic to it is, all right, Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and those guys are not your classic alphas on a basketball team. Like, Dylan Brooks has a – don't give me – I'm not calling him a punk by any stretch of the imagination. But when it comes to being the best player on the team,
who's
the alpha and everything runs through them, maybe Jalen Green ideally would be that guy right now. He's not. So if he goes into a different environment where people aren't looking at him as even a potential alpha, maybe it's a much better version. That's where I think some of the trade value is still there.
I think Dylan Brooks is playing at the peak of what you can expect from him offensively.
Right.
You know, like he's knocking down mid-range turnarounds. He's been their best three-point shooter this year, and he's averaging like 14 a game. Like, you know, like this is the ceiling of what you can expect from Dylan Brooks, and I don't expect Fred VanVleet to go 8-for-12 from three again in this game. Jalen needs to pick it up tonight. There's no question. Here's Charles Barkley, TNT, on Jalen Green.
But I said before the game, before you can become a great player, and Amy talked about it, you got to do other stuff to help the team. Like, he gets in a fog when he's not scoring, and he's just out. Think about that. This is a guy who we were bragging about all season, said it's going to be close on him making an all-star team. He's had single digits three out of four. He had 38 one game, and he's had single digits the other three games. That can't happen. That cannot happen.
Yeah, but for a young player.
No, he's not that young. He had 38 a game ago. You can't go from 38 to 8.
You're right.
You can go from 38 to 20, 24. Right. You can't go single digits.
Yeah, Chuck nailed it. He can't disappear. He's getting paid a wage now where you can't disappear in playoff games. You know, like he was the number two overall pick. This is a team that the Rockets have wanted, I think, both behind the scenes and in front of the scenes to be the face of the franchise right now. And he is 75% abysmal in this series so far.
Right, and I'm glad that Barkley checked Shaq on the young player stuff.
Yes.
Because this is his fourth year. He's played 307 games in the NBA, plus these playoff games. This is not...
Well, and to Charles' point, don't score in single digits. Like, if he were...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
young player is... You know what? I want to hear the kind of young players are like, well, he scored 40 points, but he really needs to spray. He needs to make it less about himself.
Yeah.
Can I have that kind of a young player?
Right.
Like, but you know what? He scored 30-plus points in each of the last four games, but he's got to be a little bit more dialed into to spreading the ball around. Give me that kind of young player.
Yeah, like I thought Charles nailed it. It can't be 38 down to 9. For the other three games, it's single digits. Like, in 75% of the games in the series, single digits from your leading scorer. That's not going to cut it. Kenny Smith, champion, Clutch City, two-time champ with the Rockets. I thought this was interesting. Kenny Smith had this to say, acknowledging that he's not what Jalen Green is in terms of the tools that Kenny Smith had as a player. But I thought this was maybe some interesting sort of quasi-advice for Jalen Green.
Because you guys had a dominance that may be different. But for a guy like myself, like, or a guy like Jalen who's trying to get to that level, I always said you have to come to the arena knowing that you're going to do three things, regardless of what's going to happen. So my three things was, okay, I'm going to pressure the ball. I'm going to push the ball from free throw line to free throw line as fast as I can. And when I don't have the ball and it goes inside, I'm sprinting to the open shot, the three. So every night I just knew those three things could be consistent. And I think that when I look at Jalen, I'm not sure. He has much more offensive things in his tool belt than myself or guys that I'm talking about. But he should come to the arena and say, these three things I'm going to do regardless of what happens.
Yeah, I don't think that's horrible advice, especially if your shot's not going down. You know,
right? And you look at Jalen. You know what? I'm glad Kenny brought that up. Is okay. Kenny wasn't a guy that was the dominant player that Shaq or Barkley was. Obviously, very few NBA players are.
Right.
You almost wonder if, man, Jalen Green, if Jalen Green had been drafted 20th overall instead of 2nd overall, that might have been the best thing for him. Because it is, it's just, man, give me something I can rely on.
Yeah.
Give me something that, you know, like, if he'd had a mindset of, okay, I got to do something that these guys can trust mm-hmm. and that they know I'm good for and that I can lean on. And instead, it's just a big cloud of question marks any given time that he steps out on the court.
That's why you can leave Amen Thompson on the floor when he's not playing well offensively. He does, you know, three or four other things at a pretty – he defends at an elite level, and he does a few other things at a pretty high level. That's why I don't think Amen Thompson's not going to be benched at the end of games if he doesn't have his offensive game going. There's multiple people on the text page. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Speaking of the 20th pick in the draft, you know who's the 20th pick in his draft? Cam Whitmore was the 20th pick in the draft. Multiple people, start Cam Whitmore. He's a wild card. Put Cam Whitmore in. A lot of people clamoring for Cam Whitmore. The most popular person, much like the backup quarterback is the most popular person in an NFL city when the starter's not going well. The most popular person is the young player who can come in microwave style and get you 15 points in 8 minutes from chunking up threes up there. Cam Whitmore.
Yeah, like Cam Whitmore or, I mean, any of the various other guys that whether that, you know, it doesn't mean you're looking at him as a starter for the future or anything, but in some respects, I mean, you got to look at Jalen Green as, all right, man, you're not the guy that we need you to be right now, and we're not gonna worry about, like, obviously, Udoka's not worried about how many minutes the Jalen Green gets. He's not trying to be sure he gets a minimum
number of minutes.
But I mean, across the board, you got to go into this game throwing your depth chart and everything else out the window, and just the big man lineup is tricky because I get. Yes, they've been very, very effective with the big man lineup, but it's like, how much can you get away with that? You can't worry about Steven Adams and how he's going to recover from this game.
No.
Tonight. Yeah. You just got to go, hey, get to game six before you worry about whether Steven Adams has played enough or not, or too much or not.
Yeah, and figure it out. No, you're absolutely. Yeah, like this, if I had to guess, I mean, I would bet a lot of money. Starting lineup's going to be the same tonight. It's going to be the same. It's going to be. Fred VanVleet, he's not benching Fred VanVleet or Jalen Green, like in terms of not starting. The people saying start Cam Whitmore, like that is a panic move. The Warriors have gone with a bunch of different starting lineups in this series because they've had to. You had Jimmy Butler out with a you know whatever it is, bruised pelvis or whatever it was. So they had to shuffle the deck in a couple of these games. You know, Jonathan Kuminga started a game earlier in the series. He didn't play a single minute in this last one. They've had to do that. The Rockets have been fully healthy in this series. They've just had guys that have been wildly inconsistent in the way that they've played. It'll be the same starting five tonight. Think of the five guys that are in the starting lineup. None of them are getting benched. Like Jalen Green, as bad as he's played, is not going to be benched. He will be starting. Fred VanVleet will start. Dylan Brooks and Amen Thompson and Alperen Şengün all still deserve to start. So they're not. The question is, Do they feel so bereft of shooting right now, Seth? And they actually shot the three pretty well in the last game, mostly VanVleet, but they shot the three pretty well. Do they feel like that the second unit needs an injection of something from a Reed Shepard or a Cam Whitmore? I would say one of the adjustments I would make wouldn't be either of those guys. I would give more minutes to Jabari Smith Jr. That he's only playing 20, 22, 24 minutes. I would give more minutes to him. He's been very good in this series when he's been on the floor. That would be my adjustment.
It's interesting that you brought up Jimmy Butler, you know, being out and being injured, because some people, or at least one person, would contend that Tari Eason's actually better than Jimmy Butler.
Okay. So let's hit this. And this raises all sorts of things, because we've in the last 24 hours, we've seen parents get involved. Parents getting involved in their kids' business actually goes back to this past weekend with Dion. But this is much more benign than that. This is just some social media smoke.
Well, you were mentioning with the other one outside the Rockets you'd be talking about. Tyrese Halliburton's dad going after Antetokounmpo.
After the game last night. We'll hit that in a second. But what Seth is referring to, Tari Eason's mom, Taroya Eason, goes by Momster. I love that. She's the Momster. Retweeted, comment tweeted, Hater Central. That's the Twitter account.
That's the Twitter account. Which at when the, you're
at the Hate Central, blue check mark and all, the Hater
that's
Central.
This is the where you go when you're just actually looking to get triggered.
Yeah.
When you go to Hater Central and you find something that triggers you.
Posted Tari Eason's stats from Game 4, the loss two nights ago. 17 minutes, 3 points, didn't hit a single field goal. It's got all the stats. It wasn't a good night for Tari Eason. Momster retweets it and says the following. He'd not only start on the Warriors, but he'd be their second best player, averaging 30 minutes. You unathletic MFs better pick on your own moms. Tell them to bring your pizza rolls and a drink downstairs. You look thirsty. You talk about hoop? I birthed a hooper. I wish her takes weren't so off. You know what I mean? Like, he would not be the second best.
Right. I know. That's why I fully admire and appreciate her sticking up for her son. Now, the interesting part is that this is where they did go after her a little bit. They were going at by saying they didn't at her or anything, but it said at the bottom, they said, Mama can't save you with a bunch of emojis after it. Okay. They know that Momster goes off on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I hope she's just having fun with it and she's just not genuinely triggered. But if you're bringing your son into anything, like that's, you're not quite necessarily
she's
enjoying it.
She's out there a lot, man. I mean, this is not the first tweet you and I have read of hers on this show. It's not even the 10th tweet of hers we've read on this show. We've read her a lot.
The advice I give to athletes is I give that 10 times as much to athletes' parents. You're never going to win a war on Twitter when your son is an athlete or when you're an athlete yourself. There will, in a country of 300 million people, plus the international market, there's never going to be a moment in time, even if your son wins 10 straight MVPs, where he'll be universally loved and admired. Yeah. So just don't fight that fight because you can never actually win that fight if you care about it.
If you
don't care about it, you've already won.
That's right.
That's how you win. You just don't care about it, and then you've won.
What did you think of old man Halliburton's act last night at the end of that game? By the way, Pacers beat the Bucks 119 to 118 to close out the series. The Bucks were up 118 to 111 with under a minute to go in that game. Like they completely blew the game. So the Pacers and their fans, it was in Indianapolis, they're going crazy afterwards, and old man Halliburton walks out onto the court
and gets into it. But it very much looked like Antetokounmpo was basically, it didn't look like he was trying to fight back or anything. It almost looked like he was trying to talk sense to Tyrese Halliburton's dad. His dad comes up and gets in his face.
Yeah.
And then Antetokounmpo afterwards had some, you know, very philosophical things to say about it. Tyrese Halliburton said, hey, my dad was wrong.
Yeah.
Mr. Halliburton said I was wrong and apologized. I give him a pass. I give Mr. Halliburton a pass, although I know he should deeply regret it, and he does.
Yeah.
But it was,
There were two. Go find the video. If you're in the audience, go find the video. There were two visuals from this thing. There was right after the game was over and everybody's filing onto the court to celebrate, and old man Halliburton walks out with what looked to be like a jersey and was just sort of taunting Antetokounmpo with it, and Antetokounmpo is just standing there knowing, I can't assault this old man here because I'll get arrested. And then the two of them came together what looked to be a minute or so later, and they're like, they're doing, and old man Halliburton's like a foot shorter than Antetokounmpo. And they're doing that thing, and it looks like a poster for a boxing match where their foreheads are pressed against each other.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're saying things to each other. I hadn't seen the fallout that you had, Seth, or the aftermath where it sounds like everybody kind of came to their senses a little bit in this whole thing. That's
good.
Well,
and the curious thing to me was that I guess there were some people that were acting like Antetokounmpo was in the wrong there. Even as they were head to head, Antetokounmpo is just not that guy.
Yeah.
Like, where it looked like, at any point did you really think Antetokounmpo was going to slug the old man or something?
No.
It really, to me, it looked like he was trying to make a point, I'm guessing, about like, this isn't, man, this, you don't need to be acting like this or behaving like this. And for Tyrese Halliburton to go after Antetokounmpo, his dad, to go after Antetokounmpo like that too. Antetokounmpo doesn't invite that kind of venom, unless I've missed a bunch of stuff.
No, but he's the best player on the team you just beat, and it was who knows what the vitriol in that series was.
Did he wag a finger or something at some point towards the baseline?
Yeah, like I'm guessing where old man Halliburton sits. There's probably a lot more chatter that goes on throughout a six-game or five-game series, whatever. I think it ended up being a five-game series. Antetokounmpo, if you're going to go wave a jersey on the floor like 10 feet away from a guy like that. You're right. Antetokounmpo, if we're comparing it to animals that you wouldn't want to like antagonize or whatever, like,
yeah.
Antetokounmpo is like a giraffe. You know, I don't think a giraffe is going to attack you. If that was Draymond Green, you may as well have been a matador holding out a red cape right there. Draymond Green would have belted the guy in the middle of the floor.
This is the opposite of, I look at Antetokounmpo going in at it with somebody's parent, and my immediate gut reaction before I read anything about this or anything was, okay, Antetokounmpo is the opposite of Matt Barnes. And yeah. Like Matt Barnes, remember, famously said something very disrespectful to James Harden's mom.
Yes.
James Harden's mom would go at players and yell at them and everything. Like, she was pretty lively and animated. But Matt Barnes is a guy that when I hear about Matt Barnes getting into it with a player's parent, I'm like, well, all right, it's Matt freaking Barnes.
Right.
Antetokounmpo is the opposite of Matt Barnes.
Probably more playful
as
with
a player as well.
Yeah. Probably more playful with Antetokounmpo for sure. Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Rockets need to just punch the hell out of Draymond Green and deal with it. They claim to be physical, but punk out when confronted. That'd be interesting. Bring in Cam Whitmore as a goon and just have him belt Draymond Green and break his jaw and end the series for him. There you go.
Shane Goon's a classic kid that he needs to have that moment where all of a sudden he fights back against the bully.
Oh, yeah.
And he realizes, oh, if I fight back, and I can fight, oh, maybe his dad takes him for some boxing lessons down at the Y.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know. Take him to an MMA gym.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, Shane Goon just flat out, no, I'm not going to take this anymore. I'm coming after you.
I was surprised how much love Shane Goon has been getting over the last 24 hours for the game that he played on Monday night.
Yeah.
I guess in the box score, it looks like, I mean, he's 12 of 28, so he didn't shoot the ball well. He had 31 points and double-digit rebounds, so it was a double-double. Like, if you're just looking at it from 30,000 feet, I'm just surprised how many people are ignoring the fact that when Draymond was on the floor, Şengün was worse than a zero. Like, he was taking bad shots, missing easy shots.
It's very much because it's still so much better than what Jalen Green has done.
I think there's just that
element to it where, man, the biggest sore spot right this moment is the way that Jalen Green has played in three out of these four games. So that when somebody does something that looks good in the box score, but then also at the very least is something, then, all right, well, hey, between these two, good job, Şengün. At least you're playing less like a young and timid player than Jalen Green is. But I'm with you. The fact that he was so bad and still very, like, he was the timid version of Şengün when Draymond Green was on the floor, including in that final possession.
Yeah, I came away thinking more like, not that he scored 31, it's that he could have had 40 if he just made the, like, he missed so many easy shots that he made throughout the regular season. That's what was so disappointing. On a night where they needed him, you know, like Jalen was terrible. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, so Rockets tonight, 6:30 start. Thank God, that'll be good. Did you see Seth Jonathan Alexander has a way too early 53-man roster for the Texans? I'm so mad he beat me to the punch on this. Jonathan, if you're listening, because my way too early one goes up tomorrow on the Houston Press, and I'm going to look like a copycat. I don't have the same 53 he does. He has John Metchie not making this football team right now. John Metchie, he's got the receivers. Yeah. The receivers making this team. I thought it was interesting. Obviously, you do a 53-man roster now. There's still a lot more moves that are going to get made. There's still probably four guys that aren't even in the building right now who might be on this team in week one. So we understand that. I think it is an interesting exercise, Seth, from the standpoint of you do get a feel for which guys that have been part of this team for a few years now need to have their head on a swivel, whose jobs are in danger. And Metchie was the biggest name that Jonathan had getting cut in this case.
And this is with six wide receivers also, that they're keeping a bloated wide receiver room. And John Metchie misses out because Xavier Hutchinson and Justin Watson are on the team. I think as it was last year when they had six receivers on the roster, a lot of this has to do with special teams. Mm-hmm. So, and then also maybe the recent history of the Texans getting multiple wide receivers injured all the time
for the
last couple seasons, and maybe you keep six around. Yeah, I think Xavier Hutchinson and Justin Watson and John Metchie are in a big trio right now of guys that really are in a battle to make the squad.
Yeah, Braxton Berrios, throw him in there maybe too. He's got some return ability also.
Yeah, I wonder if Braxton Berrios would be the guy that when the Texans drafted Jalen Noel probably thought,
here we go.
Oh, bingo. Boy. He's a better receiver than, or at least as a prospect, they look at him as a better receiver than I am, and he's a returner as well. That Braxton Berrios has really got to show something to get up over that. I almost feel like if Jalen Noel looks good as a returner in the preseason, then it's going to be really hard for Braxton Berrios to make the squad.
I agree. I agree with you on that. The Mechie gets cut. The other guys getting cut that have been part of this team for a few years now. Kurt Heinisch gone on the defensive line. And MJ Stewart cut out of what is a, all of a sudden, a very deep safety room. You know, between Kalen Bullock, they trade for CJ Gardner-Johnson. Jimmy Ward is still in the building. They draft Jalen Reed. Depending on how you want to categorize Jalen Petrie, he's still probably listed on the roster as a safety, if I had to guess, even though he has not played center field for this team in a year. So MJ Stewart cut as well. He's a special teamer who had actually started committing a lot of penalties on special teams. The ones that made the team that I think are, I think Damian Pierce is a really interesting one in training camp this year. You know, the drafting of Woody Marks. Drafting Woody Marks is the first kind of real move they've made that potentially infringes on Damian, whatever Damian Pierce's role is on the team.
Right, especially because they really like Gumboale for his versatility and his special teams.
Yeah, he's making the team, I think, just and, special teams so, alone, maybe. Yeah.
Right, and that's one where, too, I don't, depending on how many wide receivers they keep, maybe they end up keeping an extra running back. But that, I mean, he has four running backs on this roster, so it's probably unlikely. It would make Joe Mixon, Damian Pierce, Gumboale, and Woody Marks all being on the roster, and then J.J. Taylor and Juwar Jordan not being on the roster but probably being on the practice squad with their spots for him. That seems pretty likely.
Yep.
And if they only decide to keep three running backs. Did he keep a fullback
in
this?
He did. Jacob Johnson.
Who is in a battle, and thank you to one of my live stream listeners, viewers who reminded me of British Brooks.
Yeah, man.
The British Bulldog.
Yeah.
And the potential that he has. Yeah, that's the fullback competition. Actually, I look forward to
you do
a heated fullback competition.
You're
in,
for the fullback competition.
100%. Yes.
All right.
Jacob Johnson, the veteran, versus British Brooks, the college running back who's learning how to play fullback.
Yes,
and showed some promising moments doing just that in the final preseason game last year.
Christian Harris makes the team, and he makes the team on my 53 that I'm doing, that I'm dropping tomorrow as well, but I do wonder, like, what's the health situation with Christian Harris? I do wonder what the health situation was with him last season, but that's water under the bridge now. But Christian Harris, like, look, I think Christian Harris is under contract. He's going to be on this team. But I don't know what was weirder, just sort of the smoke and mirrors clandestine nature of the injury that he had all year long, where it was this weird thing that nobody could get their arms around, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Or the fact that when he was healthy, finally, towards the end of the year, he just didn't play. Like he wasn't on the field.
And he came in and played a good chunk of snaps, and then I have to just guess, because if I remember correctly on the timeline of it, he came in and played pretty well in the first game, and then there was a fall off.
He played 82% of the snaps against the Dolphins in that first game back, which was one of the games Azeez Al-Shaire was suspended for.
Yeah.
So there's no Azeez, yeah.
But then there was kind of a drop off.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that whatever the injury was a huge factor in all of it.
I was
encouraged by how he looked when he was on the field. And then there was just, he wasn't being used at all.
But he was dressed. That was the weird thing. Like, he's dressed, he's on the sidelines, and he plays seven snaps, you know?
Yeah.
It's just strange.
The biggest one there is Christian Harris. Okay, so Christian Harris makes the team. If for whatever reason, because of injury or otherwise, they just don't like him as much, then it's, okay, Jamal Hill is still a draft pick that has a lot of upside. He was very raw as a college player, and I didn't expect him to be a factor last year, but he is very, very athletic, and he's really still learning how to play the position.
Yep.
And Jake Hansen doesn't make the team, or the 53-man roster. He's a guy that I think it will still be around, and they like being able to use him situationally.
Yeah.
Or when in the Green Bay game, he played a bunch because of the injuries.
Jonathan points this out. He's like, I don't have Jake Hansen making the team, but I haven't had him making the team every year before. I'm paraphrasing, but like every year before this, Jake Hansen always proves me wrong. He always ends up making the team.
EJ Speed does make the roster, and I just want to point this out because a lot of people have said, hey, Seth, they gave they gave EJ Speed a 1 year up to $5 million contract with incentives for games that he starts. Seems like they expect him to be a starter. No, that is a classic prove it type of deal.
Yeah.
And you know, Darrell Taylor, the defensive end that started with the Seahawks and was with the Bears last year, yeah, he's got a 1 year $5 million contract.
Right.
That does not suggest or hint that he's going to start.
Nope. I'll tell you the weirdest thing about doing a 53-man roster right now, other than it's April, but it's specific to the Texans. This is the first time, I think, since I've been writing for the Houston Press since 2009. I think this is the first one I've ever done where I have not typed the name John Weeks. Not putting John Weeks in there is the specialist. That was easy. Fairbairn, yeah, whoever the punter was, and John Weeks. And now there's a damn long snapper competition between this Tucker Addington guy and this Brinkman fella that they signed off the streets over the weekend. A long snapper competition.
That's probably the thing that brings NFL Network into camp.
Probably
they'll,
so.
There's some niche website out there that's
for long
probably got
finish.
Yeah, they've probably got a John Weeks roster on their jersey in the background of their videos,
mm-hmm,
and they'll be in Houston watching the long snapper battle.
Yep. The people reacting to the Mechie part of this, if you missed it, Jonathan Alexander's 53-man roster he did for the Chronicle has John Mechie not making the team. I'm not surprised. Texan fans are agreeing, like, Mechie is done. That's a text on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. Bye-bye, Mechie. That's a smart man cutting Mechie. Boy, people have turned on John Mechie, Seth. The sympathy hourglass has run out of sand for John Mechie.
There's almost like all those feel-good stories last training camp about how he'd finally recovered from cancer treatment,
yes,
people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, was, oh, okay, cool. Now we're going to treat him exactly like an actual, like it's just a normal football
player. Which he
player
has said he wants to be treated allow like. He has,
yeah,
said
no,
he
wants. No, 100%. Yeah. But I don't know.
This is what you asked for. This is what you asked for, Mechie. You wanted to be treated like a normal football player. The fans are turning on you. Yeah. I hope he makes the team, man. I hope he deservedly makes the team. How about that? A lot of Rockets chatter on the text line. The funny thing is, this is a text. Funny thing, guys, is Cam Whitmore, being even younger than Jalen and a bit of a wild card, is way more confident and way more of an alpha than Jalen. That's the problem with Cam Whitmore and bringing him into a situation like this, is he will either shoot you into or shoot you out of this game while he's in there. Like,
ride it.
He ain't scared at all.
Yeah. Well, I say, hey, we're in a position where you got to ride that. At the very least, hey, if the Astros come out again in the third quarter and they don't feel like scoring for the first 5 minutes of the quarter,
yeah,
then by all means,
yeah,
let's say 3 minutes into the Rockets
bring
refusing to score points,
yep,
go ahead and just throw Cam Whitmore in there, please.
Text message. This is from somebody with ties to Kansas City. Don't sleep on Justin Watson. Heard from several football guru buddies in KC. Both immediately texted and said we got a steal when we got him. This is kind of a corollary of your thing, Seth, where the evaluation of guys, you're going to get the hardcore good evaluation of college players from people who watch players play for their school. I feel like Kansas City is the
closest. So likewise within the NFL,
yeah,
the guys that have been like, hey, keep an eye on this guy.
Yeah, Chiefs fans are a little like college fans, you know? Like, I feel like they've got a good gauge on Justin Watson. I like Justin Watson. When I've watched Chiefs games, Justin Watson always seems to make a play or two in those games.
He always does make a play or two. I guess I guess that's probably his reliability and your ability to use him in doses would matter, because it's not like the Chiefs haven't had a bunch of situations in the last few years where they could use a better, you know, an extra couple of receivers.
Right.
I mean, it's a testament to Pat Mahomes, some of the things that he's done when their receivers have been either traded away or injured, or they bring in various guys that are cast offs from other teams. So I guess that's the part with Justin Watson that I'm always, yes, I believe what those guys are saying, but I also got to remember, and it was Pat Mahomes throwing him the ball in those situations.
Yep.
You know, he's had his career high for receptions is 27.
Yeah, like and that's what his role will be on this team, too, to be clear. He's not coming in and getting 60 catches or anything. I Payne and Pendergast with you. Keep sending your opinions in on whatever it is we've been talking about today. 713-572-4610. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Up next, the trailer is out for a documentary that I am counting down the days towards, and I wonder if people here in Houston are as well. The audio works on radio. Take a listen. We'll play it for you coming up next. right, May 20th is the date. I'm very much looking forward to this documentary. And the trailer, which we're going to play the audio from here, it's about a minute long, Fall of Favre. The trailer, Seth, I was already excited to see this documentary that was about all of Brett Favre's peccadilloes after he got done playing football. A lot of it after he got done playing football, some of it while he was still playing football, towards the end of his career. You know, some of his time with the Jets where he got a little frisky with his cell phone, you know, and taking pictures of himself and sending them to people he shouldn't have been sending them to, things like that.
So this is mostly about the end of his career and then the post career.
Yeah.
Do they just say in the trailer whether they address like the painkiller addiction early in his career?
Let's play it here and we can see. I don't recall seeing that in the trailer. The trailer is mostly centered around Jen Sturger is the young lady's name. That's the lady, and you're going to hear her. She sat down for this documentary. So that's
She was the Jets
she's a game day host. She was the in-stadium host. Yeah, she was the girl at Florida State that got a lot of attention. Brent Musburger pointed her out at a game and she was one of the first people to rise to viral fame. And
but she's the one that Brett Favre sent the picture of his
His ding dong to. Yes. Yeah. Yep. So you
place that the bathing suit covers.
Yeah, so you'll hear her in this. They address the Mississippi welfare funds in this as well. Take a listen. Here's the trailer. Fall Apart.
Everybody wish they could be an NFL quarterback. You get all the notoriety. You know, you get paid all the money.
Brett Favre was a cult-like, iconic figure.
People say he was a football god.
There are a lot of reasons why you might question Brett Favre's inner goodness.
Allegations that he sent lewd texts and photos to a New York Jet employee.
Brett Favre ultimately destroyed my life.
In the life of Brett Favre, not everything is what it seems.
He starts to go through life thinking, I can do whatever I want. At what level does that stop?
I was at a game and someone said Brett Favre wanted my phone number. And I just kept saying no. I started getting text messages. And then I started getting voicemails when I was like, oh, I'm in serious trouble here.
Walter, how'd you come up with that?
Maybe we shouldn't be surprised that he got caught up in a federal welfare misappropriation scandal.
You take money intended for the poorest. I don't know how he sleeps at night.
People don't want most of that stuff to come out. People want their heroes.
When someone shows you who they are, believe them.
And there you go. That's the trailer for Fall of Favre. This is going to be interesting. I think it was Peter King who said that towards the end, like a lot of times people just, I'm paraphrasing what was said, but oftentimes with their heroes, people want to bury their head in the sand. They don't want to know all this stuff.
Right, right. No, and it's a little bit of just like, that's the part with Favre where, all right, there's the football side of things. And then, you know, in a previous and bygone era, then you retire and you go off into the shadows and show up at a banquet every now and then.
Right.
I'm not denying that any of these things are true or anything like that. There is a part of me, maybe this is a character flaw in myself, where I'm like, I just prefer, like, once a guy's been retired for 20 years or so, that I don't want to think about Brett Favre anymore. Not to excuse anything that he may have done, it's, as long as he just agrees to be part of the contract too and doesn't show up every Sunday on my TV screen.
Yeah.
Or whatever, what have you.
So will you watch this?
Probably not that I don't think it'll be interesting. I've just got other stuff on my playlist.
You do?
I got to get to before I get to a Brett Favre documentary.
I will watch this. I will watch this with popcorn. Brett Favre documentary.
This is the kind of thing, this is what I'm cautioning you against. I think it's going to be the kind of thing where you're watching it and you already know everything that's in the documentary. Okay. Remember the Astros, a lot of the stuff that came out of the Astros were, hey, we're going to, the book that came out about the Astros. And about the garbage can era and all that. In the long articles, you read it and you'd be like, okay. It's like basically review before a chapter quiz or something.
Yeah.
If you've already lived through it. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you, I will predict that you, after this, are going to say, oh, yeah, this is a reminder of all the dodgy stuff that Brett Favre has done, but there weren't any revelations.
You think it'll all be stuff that I've known, that I know already? It'll all be, okay. Now, keep in mind, I didn't know what the Riverdance was yesterday. So
that's true.
You know,
but that was because that was one of those curious parts of you've got a really, really good memory, but except for some things that are that just curiously.
I think weird blind spots. Yeah.
Because you remember so many sports things so well.
Yeah.
There's some other things that there's just new. There's no room for in your brain to get booted out.
Yeah. The hard drive is not unlimited. So, yeah, I think you're – maybe so. It's like an hour – it's probably an hour-long documentary. I'm not – if it's a waste of time, it's a waste of time, you know?
You know what it is? I think that, by and large, most NFL fans know that, all right, listen, yeah, I've already – you know, Brett Favre occupies a certain part of my brain, and I've already thought about those things, and I don't need to think about it anymore. That's how I feel about it. Like, I'm not – yeah, I know that he did a lot of really shady and dodgy stuff, and that's just – kind of who he is.
Yeah. No, I'll watch it. I'm guessing they're having watch parties for this in Chicago, Detroit, maybe Minnesota even, where he played some good football but blew their chance at getting to a Super Bowl.
Weirdly, some pockets of Green Bay perhaps as well.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah.
Just like Aaron Rodgers, there's a complicated relationship with Green Bay and both those quarterbacks.
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of people out there that dislike Brett Favre that will hate watch this thing for an hour gladly. So have you, you and I think had said we were going to do this. Have you watched the Quincy Avery documentary yet?
No, I haven't watched the Quincy Avery, the quarterback's coach documentary.
Yeah.
I haven't. But just a real quick cautionary tale for just people out there. The one thing that you can glean from the Brett Favre experience, when you're a middle-aged guy, and Brett Favre was the equivalent of a middle-aged guy in terms of quarterback years.
Yeah.
If all of a sudden you find yourself in a different city and your family's not around, just be on alert for your own. There's a lot of things that you've tamped down, perhaps in your personality that you completely forgot about, or what have you, or you haven't been tested with it in a long time. Like it's been a long time since you were, you know, in a relationship, but also going out a lot and everything.
Yeah.
And you just, some of those guardrails for keeping your personal life in order, they're gone. And you gotta be conscious of it.
Good
and
advice.
I feel like Brett Favre, when he showed up in New York, it just felt like one of those classic situations. It's almost like you're a freshman in college.
In New York.
Like, hey, no restrictions. And I got like, oh, wow.
Right.
I can do whatever I want at night.
Of all cities, right? Too. Like, he's going from Green Bay, where everything closes at 9.
Yeah.
To, you know, although he was probably able to keep some of the places open, I would imagine, you know, he's Brett Favre, to New York, which is the opposite end of the spectrum. No, that's a good point. Buy a book. You know, buy a book. Stay in your room. Buy a book.
Go to a Bible study or something. You got to fill in the free time with something.
That's right.
And,
All right. Payne and Pendergast.
As far as the quarterback documentary with Quincy Avery, I've not watched it yet. Did you?
No, I've not either.
Okay.
I've not either.
It's our weekend. That's all right. The draft was kind of occupying my attention the last
couple
of
weeks. Same. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. You're more interested in the Quincy Avery documentary than you are the Brett Favre documentary. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm not interested. All that interested in either of them, really. The problem with so many of these documentaries used to be kind of They were held to a higher standard. They didn't make any money, and they just kind of they tried to keep almost a journalistic integrity about it.
Yeah.
Where now so many of them are just the subjects of the documentary are getting paid, and you see a polished version of
everything.
Listen
to you docu snob. Oh.
Garrett Heinrich texted. He said, in quotes, "Leave retired athletes alone. Probably a guilty Seth Payne." That's what
Seth is sticking up for his people. Retired
don't go
athletes.
Digging around these retired professional athletes' closets. Dang it!
Please. All right, Payne and Pendergast. People winging. Justin Watson's been to the last four Super Bowls. Thank you. Yeah. That's why he's on the squad. He's been to the last four. Yeah, because he was on.
Thanks, Ed Reed, thinking that it, got us into that pickle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he going to get hip surgery in a couple of weeks? Thank you very much.
It is a good point in terms of trying to have as many guys as possible on a team that have championship experience.
Know what it looks like. Yeah.
There's an element there where I think those guys have kind of like a different set of expectations hardwired in, and that also because they can speak because they've been to the mountaintop and they can tell guys that, hey, it's worth it, or hey, we've been through adversity and all this sacrifice and hard work, it's totally worth it. It is good to have as many of those guys as possible.
I think that's the reason CJ Gardner-Johnson is on this team. Because they did not have an acute need at safety, and they went and got CJ Gardner-Johnson for about $9 or $10 million a year is what they're paying him. So I think that's why he's on the team. All right, making around the internet, I don't know what we call it, a meme or a topic that's made its way around the internet in the last 48 hours. We talked about it at the end of the show yesterday with the guys on In the Loop. One gorilla versus 100 unarmed men, who would win? J.P. Hovey, who is part of the Bussin' with the Boys podcast, Will Compton and Taylor Lewan, he has the list of 100 humans that he would recruit to try to win the battle to beat up one gorilla. The guys with Houston ties on this list, do they belong on this list? And his approach to this is really, really funny. We'll go through the list. See if you agree with us on this. 100 men or 100 people versus one gorilla. Which Houstonians would be on this list? Text in if you want to add some. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. We'll do that coming up next. Stay there.